Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice-weekly podcast for people who make fine art with needle and thread. And Christine, not with us this week, but returning to us from the Painted Pony Designs and Destination Dallas and now Needlepoint Shop Day, Debbie Woodard. Debbie, hi.
Howdy from Texas, and I am delighted to be back. I think it's been about a year since we talked. I think we talked right after the 2017 Dallas market.
I believe we did. So this is kind of an annual thing then.
That sounds good to me.
Okay. Yeah, so when we talked, Christine and I had planned to come to Destination Dallas, which by the time this is aired will have been completed, I think, 3 or 4 weeks ago now. But I had to go to Europe for the paying job, so.
Sounds like you got a better offer, so I
can. Be careful. Be careful.
Okay.
Going to Europe is fine for the paying job. That changes the game. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's. Dinner at night in different restaurants. That's the excitement.
Mm-hmm. Like when I go to market, everyone's like, "Oh, it's so exciting to go to this town or that town," and I'm like, you know, all the convention centers look the same, and we just eat in fancy restaurants at night. That's
yep.
really the only difference.
That's right. Yep. Might as well just be down the road. It doesn't matter.
It is, right.
Yep. So, yeah. So, and having you back, number one, it's just fun to talk to you. But number two, couldn't be there, so I wanted to hear about this thing. Because as I followed Destination Dallas on the Facebook, you guys were having a great time, it looked like.
Yes, we had the very best Destination Dallas I think we've ever had. We had a hippie theme, a 1960s theme. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of people that went all out with their decorations in their rooms and what they wore. A lot of us wore like those old fringed, remember those old leather fringed vests that went down to your knees?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of
yeah.
us had those on. Everybody had on love beads and peace sign necklaces, and it was a lot of fun. Our numbers were really good. We had the most buyers that we have ever had. We had 180 that signed up, and then you always lose a few, you just always do. But then we had the most people that we had ever signed up on site. So we ended up, I think, around 180 shops walking the floors. We had the most vendors we ever had. We had 120 vendors. And then we had a couple of activities that I'm happy to talk about, and both of those numbers were really high. We had a banquet on Sunday night that we always have. We had about 200 people at that banquet, which was the most we'd ever had. And we have a Friday night dinner event where we load buses up and go to a popular restaurant in town, and we had 145 people do that. We had to rent a third bus at the last minute so that we could get everybody on board.
Well, all right, that is exactly what I was curious about, because, you know, we hear about stores struggling and, you know, people retiring and closing stores, and people can't get to stores and blah, 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 blah. And yet people that I talk to doing these podcasts, often I get the feeling that things are exciting, that the needle point and needlework business in general is moving along quite nicely, and these kinds of numbers really indicate that fact that there's a lot of activity. I mean, that to have the most buyers and the most exhibitors that you've had is, I mean, that's fantastic.
It really is. Now, this was our 17th or 18th year. That's always up for debate how long we've been in business. but definitely the numbers have always gone up every year. We've been real lucky. We've never had a year where we had less than before. This year was very encouraging because of how many new shops I was able to sign up, how many new shops were coming out, how many people had bought a former shop. And so they were new store owners. We have a class every year in Dallas called Needlepoint Retailing 101, and it's for shop owners who've had their businesses for less than 5 years. And this year was our largest class that we ever had. We had 11 businesses and probably about 28, 30 people sitting in the class because they can all come together. It's not like you have to have just one person in the class.
So that many, all people with shop ownership of less than 5 years.
Yes. And most of those people were brand new. I off the top of my head, I can think of about six that have been open for less than a year. We had probably a couple of people that were actually opening their shop either right before market or right after. And then in the course of the market, I found out that a fellow designer is opening a shop in October. So there's a lot of exciting business going on in the needlepoint industry right now, with new shop owners and with younger people buying out the maybe a little bit older shop owner buying their business.
Yeah, well, and there are a lot of shop owners just ready to retire, and some of you hear horror stories where they couldn't sell, they had to close. So to have so many of them get purchased and have fresh blood, if you will, is that's really encouraging. Did you get a sense in that class and from those new people that they're off and running in pretty good shape?
Yes, one of the things you have to do in order to be registered at Destination Dallas as a shop is that you have to submit your lease agreements. And so by doing that, we pretty much know that you're healthy enough to get started. Because I am shocked at how much square footage for a retail shop is. It's eye-opening, because when you compare it to like the cost of the square footage of your house, even here in Texas, the retail space can be double that and even more. And it's even more reason for all of us to support our local needlepoint shops and needlework shops, because they have a hefty rental payment every month that they have to cover before they even cover the cost of the canvases and supplies and their employees and everything else. It looks to me like a pretty big commitment to opening, to be willing to open a shop and to maintain a shop for years.
And now your show is all needlepoint, all painted canvas, or do you have some charted with that?
We have a variety of needlework at the market. It has sort of the niche. It's sort of become more needlepoint than anything else. When we first started the market back in, oh, I don't know, 2002, I think, we had a variety of different vendors at the time. We had some knitters, we had some cross stitchers, and then of course mostly needlepoint, but we did have a variety of other people. As the markets have, the trade shows have changed a lot in the last 5, 6, 7 years, and people are kind of going into their own specialty trade show. And so you kind of have a trade show now that's kind of heavy for the knitters. You have us that's heavy for the needle pointers. And of course, in Nashville, you have a market that's really geared toward the cross stitch
Right.
industry.
Yeah. And you have a lot of new designers, you had a lot of young designers. What
We
was your reading on that?
did have a lot of new designers this year. I don't have a number, but we had 10 or 11 of those as well, and which is a pretty good percentage of what we see every year. And a couple of them were younger, like Pewter and Pine. I believe this was her second year to attend. We had Don Lynch's daughter's line. I don't remember the name of it, but she's either right out of college or she's about to graduate. So she's a very young designer. And then we what another thing that we saw, maybe not such young designers, but we saw a lot of shops beginning to create their own lines,
Oh.
based with their home business, I mean with their store-based businesses. Off the top of my head, we had A Stitch in Time out of San Marino. She has started a line. We had Susie Valerie out of Enrich Stitch, and I believe she's based in Connecticut. And we had 3K Designs, which is Three Kittens. And I'm sorry to say I don't remember where Three Kittens is located, but she has a Three Kittens has a shop itself. So there's kind of a trend right now to see a lot of the shop owners beginning to create lines. In addition to, to just a pure artist.
Right. That, well, that's interesting. That's for a store. That's another revenue stream. So that's innovative.
It is.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't even know how they can do both. I mean, this my
that was going to be my next question was how.
I don't. There's at one point in my life, I thought, oh, I'd love to own a needlepoint shop. Well, I just don't even know how you can do more than one of these things at a time. But apparently, there's some super women out there, and a couple of super men that can do it all. I'm just not one of them.
Yeah, that's a store for 12 hours, and then designing for 8 hours, and then you might sleep the other four, I think. Yeah.
I know. With me just having my partner and I having Destination Dallas, Destination Dallas turns into a full-time job around May. And when I mean full-time, I mean we're both putting in 30 to 40 hours a week to Destination Dallas beyond what our lines require.
Right.
And our lines can require, you know, 50, 60 hours a week. So it sounds crazy, but there's weeks. I know we're working between 80 and 95 to 100 hours a week.
Yeah.
Especially if you get closer to the market.
Yeah. You get a successful trade show and it does creep that 1, 3 or 4 days of events, creeps right into the rest of the year in a big hurry. Yeah.
It really does. And Destination Dallas has become so large that, It really, like I said, it's become a full-time job in itself. The responsibility of putting on Destination Dallas is tremendous because it's not just about putting on a market. It's about involving having your market be successful for 300 other businesses, because with 180 shops and 120 vendors, I'm not just responsible for me. I'm responsible. Everything I do and all my time commitments have to go towards what's best for 300 different businesses.
Right. Yeah. What was your sense in the designs that were exhibited? Are we seeing more ornaments, more larger pieces? What designs seem to be popping out for you?
I think we're still kind of in the trend of sort of the folk art landscape and florals. I'm still seeing a lot of that. I am seeing a lot of, and I don't know how to classify it. They're not primitive like Grandma Moses primitive, but they're primitive, kind of modern pieces. A lot of flat, one-dimensional type designs.
Uh-huh.
I was seeing a lot of that. I saw that Melissa Shirley has a person like that. I saw that with a couple of the new designers. I can't remember which ones, but I saw some of those kind of more modern type pieces. And they're not modern like modern art, but they're just they're whimsical, but they're very flat at the same time, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of that.
Hmm. That's interesting.
I didn't notice particularly a trend towards small pieces or large pieces. I know in my line, we've been gravitating more towards larger pieces because we're doing a lot of landscapes. I've got a couple of fantastic landscape designers, folk art designers. So some of our pieces have gotten a little bit bigger, and I didn't see any resistance in purchasing those at the market. People were happily buying those while they were there.
Yeah, that's okay. That's all right. No, I just wonder because you see a lot of people stitching ornaments, and and you know, for whatever reason, number one, it's fun to have ornaments, but number two, they tend to get started and finished earlier, faster. And so I just wondered if that prevailed or if that was something people were using to fill in between big ones. You know, it's hard to see what people are doing on an ongoing basis, just watching Facebook groups.
Right. I think that, first of all, I think a lot of people have a big project, but they have some little side projects as well. I'll give you an example. I've started a blog. It was before, I don't know, it's been like a year. And I was stitching one of my Mary Charles pieces. It's just an 8x8, and it's on 13 counts. So how long would that take? Well, apparently it takes forever because I don't have a lot of time to stitch. it. And my goal was to talk about it every Sunday and show my progress. Well, my Sundays are, you know, months in between because I don't get a lot stitched. I don't have enough to put on a blog. And but in the meantime, even though I have this one piece that's never going to be finished in my lifetime, I do have I started an angel a couple of weeks ago, just to have another angel model. And so I've got this little side project when my other project gets a little boring, because it's got, like I said, it's a landscape. It's a fairly simple one. It has big, vast areas of you know, one color to stitch. And and that sort of, I get bored and I need to go to something else every once in a while.
Yeah, it's the trouble when you start a blog based on progress stitching, isn't it? You do that.
I learned my lesson there. I don't think I'm going to take my readers, all three of them or however many I have. I don't think I'm going to take them through another project unless I have the project finished, and then I'm just going to fake it over Sundays.
No, I follow a couple of people who use that model for their blogs, and I marvel every stinking week they make progress, and they make significant progress. And it's like, I have no idea how you do that. I have no idea, but they keep plotting, you know, just plugging away, and pretty soon it's done and I'm starting a new one and I just want to punch them.
Yeah, I know. I have a couple of friends that are designers and they'll say, "Oh yes, after I finish work, I'll go down into my basement and I'll stitch down there." And I'm like, "Are you kidding me? I do this from the time I wake up till 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't have, I never have 5 minutes to stitch." My best stitching time is when John and I tend to drive to a lot of the shows, and he just likes to drive, and then I can stitch in the car. So I get a lot done driving around the country.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you have a chauffeur, you know, nothing wrong with that.
Yes. Yes. And he likes to drive and I like to stitch. So it's a perfect match.
Well played. Well played. What did you get a sense of what's working for shops and what isn't in terms of what they're selling, what customers are looking for? Still those landscapes, I guess. And
yes, I mean, I have a friend, well, my partner in at Destination Dallas is a well-known stocking designer and does a lot of the full-size stockings in her line, and she's known for that. Her line is strictly Christmas, which a lot of people have heard of. And she's always telling me that, you know, if people are going to stitch one thing in their life, and that's it, they're going to stitch a stocking most likely, because that's the one item that gets passed down through the generations and everything. So I think that trend is still there. There's about four or five major stocking designers. In addition to strictly Christmas, you're going to have Melissa Shirley, Rebecca Wood, Alexa, and Tapestry. Susan Roberts, her Liz pieces would be, are also very popular for stockings. And those lines are all look like big, healthy lines to me. So I think a lot of people are stitching stockings at the time.
Yeah, that the Christmas thing, that that seems to carry through no matter what, doesn't it?
It does. I was told many years ago that Christmas accounted for about 50% of all needlepoint sales, and I would believe that's probably true. And it's followed up. When I first started, a lot of people did Easter, but the Halloween-themed pieces have really taken the place of Easter. And I would say Halloween is probably running a close second to what sells, at least my line, and from what I've talked to my other designer friends, what's selling in their lines.
That Halloween is one of the most baffling things to me in all the years I've been alive, because it isn't just needlework, and boy, there is an awful lot of Halloween based needlework done, but the home decorating, all, I mean, it really, I do not understand how that day has become such a force. I mean, and retail businesses of all kinds count on it to really get the season started off in terms of the holidays. And it's just amazing. And then you can tell when it's getting late in the summer, because the Halloween needlework starts popping up on all the groups and in the blogs and stuff more and more. And just one of the most amazing things to me how that's evolved.
It is. One of my new designers has a couple of vintage type Halloween signs, and that's really all that she has that's in her line that's Halloween. And those pieces, I cannot even keep them in stock. They're really good looking pieces. I'll just put a little plug in here for Painted Pony, but they're really good looking pieces. And it's just amazing. One says magic, and I can't remember what the other. I think it says Happy Halloween or something. But they look like old vintage signs, like, you know, that used to be like glued to the side of a box or something.
Uh-huh.
And they're really they. I can't, like I said, I can't keep them in stock.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And for me, I'm not a Halloween fan. Couldn't care less. But the fall colors. Are always fall is my favorite time of year anyway, so I just love the fall colors, and of course the all the Halloween designs bring those out. I mean, orange aside, really bring out all those very nice warm rich colors, and so it's always fun to look at them. But jack-o'-lanterns, I'll pass. You know, I just
pass on that.
Yeah, yeah, I'll have to check out these signs here. What's the designer name?
The designer is, her name is Lori Siebert, Siebert.
And you carry her line then?
I do. She is a new designer that we picked up and started showing in January of this year when we went to our January markets.
Oh, okay. Have to check that out. Those sound interesting.
Oh, they do. They're pretty.
Yeah. Needlepoint Shop Day. How do we get started? I think it's a fantastic idea, and I said a couple weeks ago in a midweek show, I hope it can evolve into Needle Workshop Day, where we have a day for all. How did that get started?
Well, in January, we had gone to a needlepoint group meeting with our trade association, and they were doing a slide presentation of everything that they had planned out for the following year, and not just with needlepoint. With it was the main group had come in and was showing what each segment. They were showing each segment a little film strip of everything, a little slideshow of everything that was going on. And one of the things that popped up with the yarn people is that they were going to have a local yarn shop day.
Oh.
I think it was in April, and I kept looking at it, and I was like, well, where's the needlepoint shop day? and nobody else seemed to notice it. And I was just really concerned that we didn't have a needlepoint shop day. So I had complained about it and whined about it, and nothing happened. And anyway, so
you tried that route, and that didn't work. So
no, it didn't work. Anyway, so somewhere like in April because it was when the yarn shop day was getting talked about, and there was a lot of stuff on the internet about it and everything. And I was out jogging, and all of a sudden I thought, you know, if we don't do it, as in Destination Dallas, it's not going to get done. And so I called my partner while I was jogging around our block, and I just said, we need to do a local needlepoint shop day. Because I don't think this is going to happen unless unless somebody's willing to jump in and do it. And so really just in this course of 10 minutes or so, we were like, okay, we're going to do it. And I said, I have a graphics background. I can design the logo. And I did call and talk to Tina Nay a little bit about their yarn shop day. And when I went to the June market, I met the man that was the brains behind the shop day. And so he gave me a lot of hints. And everything, and we just we have a mutual friend that comes to market, and she is a whiz at website design, and she volunteered all of her time, and I volunteered all of my time, and we just put this shop day together, and got it launched, and the shops were very enthusiastic from the very beginning. They were all on board.
Yeah, well, I could tell that. We mentioned it the Wednesday before. It was now 3 weeks ago, but we mentioned in the Wednesday show about that. And I had gone through the listing of participating shops, and there were several that had, you could tell, had made an effort to plan as sales and events on that day, and some even carrying it through to the weekend. And that's pretty exciting.
Yes, I had picked, let's do it on a Thursday. And my thinking was that the shops would get home on Tuesday, Wednesday, and by Thursday, they would be throwing their canvases out on the tables and their customers would be coming in. It seems to be kind of the way it's done. And I thought, well, let's just piggyback local needlepoint shop day on that day, kind of that time period of when they're putting out their canvases. So I had picked Thursday. Well, a lot of the shops were, you know, some of the shops were like, well, we really can't get our act together. I said, that's fine. I mean, you can have your own shop day, whatever day works for you. You know, if Saturday works for you, do it on Saturday. And then there was several shops that were like, well, we're going to do it the whole weekend. And a lot of shops really went to town. One in particular that I can think of is the Needlepointer up in Washington.
Yes.
And she had 3 days of... She had demonstrations. She had a meet and greet with one of the designers. She had classes and a party, you know, food, the whole, I mean, it was like, she just did it all. And there were other shops that did it as well. And our website is still up and will be up for a while with the activities. So if anybody wants to get on, go to localneedlepointshopday.com and you can see all the activities that were planned by over 100 shops for that day. I suspect that next year it will get even bigger and there will be more activities among the shops. So I'm leaving those up there for the shops to kind of look at what other people did so they can get ideas on how to expand their needlepoint shop day. I'm going to be sending out surveys this week to both designers that participated, shops that participated, and with consumers who came, stitchers who came to the shops and get their opinions. I have a feeling that we may be moving the shop day to Saturday. I know as a designer, by the time I got home, I had to turn around and drive to Louisiana. That was pretty hard to do. Right after coming off of Dallas.
Right.
I don't know yet. I'm not going to say yes, it's next Saturday. It's going to be Saturday next year, but I suspect that a lot of people are going to want that.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me. That I think for a lot of shops, Saturday's a big sale day anyway, big business day. So to tie that in would be a real plus, yes.
It is, and when we put it together, we were just thinking of like the day that they throw a lot of them get their canvases priced and put it on the table. But I did hear from a couple of consumers that had reached out and talked to me through messaging, and they were like, we really would like this to be on a Saturday because a lot of us work 9 to 5 and we're not getting to participate in these activities.
Right. Well, exactly that. Yeah, that's
right.
The eternal hobby shop problem is how to be open when people aren't working. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yep. Yeah, that was when I did the aquarium hobby for many, many years, and I read that in a magazine once, how to have your local fish store fail. And item number one was be closed when people aren't working. And yeah, exactly. You gotta find those hours, and that's tough for a shop owner too, because you want to be home in the evening, and you want to be home on a weekend, at least one weekend day. Yet that's when people are available to come and buy product, and so you need to be open. And it's
it is.
Yeah,
it is. It's kind of hard. I've noticed there's a trend lately in the shops kind of being open. Their hours are kind of like all over the place during the week. And it makes it a little bit hard. I'm just going to put that little hint out there to any shop owners out there. It makes it a little bit hard for us to know when you're going to be open for us to get there. And yes, some hours past 5 o'clock are really beneficial because a lot of people are just, you know, when they need that one skein of thread to finish up a project and, you know, they want to stop and run into a shop at least have until 6 o'clock or so. But I do understand it is hard. It's hard. It's hard to have a life outside of your shop in the first place, and then to have hours that you can work within as well.
Oh yeah, and find me five needlework shop owners or five hobby of, you know, name your hobby shop owner who closes at 6 o'clock in the evening and walks out the door at 6 o'clock. You know, that doesn't happen at all.
No, it doesn't. I used to work part time before I became a designer. I worked part time at a little needlework shop in Austin. And if you were the person that closed, yeah, you didn't leave. You didn't leave right then at 6 o'clock. You know, you had to count the money and hide the money, and you had to do some kind of, you know,
right.
Do your cash register things, and you had little papers that you had to fill out, and there was just all kinds of stuff to do. And then, you know, and for me, like if I was there by myself, having to lock the door, go to my car, run back to the door to make sure I locked it, go back to my car, then go back again, make sure I locked it, you know.
Yeah, there's that one. Yeah, that little voice in halfway home. Did I lock the door?
Did I lock the door? Yes.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, that is tough. And that's when you talk about needlework shops and what they go through. Yeah, it's you really have to be dedicated to the hobby and dedicated to the shop for the hours, because you can't have normal hours. You just simply can't. And that
leads back to the needlepoint shop day. One of the things what we wanted to do is there's a lot of avenues now on how to buy needlepoint. You know, they've got websites that they can buy from. They've got the stash exchanges they can buy from. And we really wanted our day to focus on the needlepoint shops and their owners and to celebrate those venues for forwarding and continuing on needlepoint and other forms of needlework. And you really can't get it all unless you're in a needlepoint shop. You know, you're gonna have your supplies and your materials, and you're gonna get instruction, and you're gonna be able to see tons of fibers. You're gonna get to touch everything. You can't do that over a computer screen. You know, you get involved in it, and the shops will run retreats, and they'll bring in national teachers and things like that. And the shops really do need a lot of support. It's hard to run a small business in this day and time. And we really wanted to focus on them, which is why it was Needlepoint Shop Day, as opposed to Needlework Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm pulling for Needlework Shop Day, not just to get the other shops in. But it's, you know, it's so very true, and it's true in every hobby. I ride a bicycle a lot, and was watching or listening to a podcast on cycling the other day, and that was the topic. Do we need local bike stores? You know, everybody has it's LBS or LNS or. You know, an aquarium hobby, LFS, I mean, they're all the same. But that same discussion, it was the very same reasons, the very same arguments. And the conclusion is, yes, we need local bike shops just like we need local needlework shops because of all of the things that they offer that you can't get through online sales. And
even through the big box stores and I'm counting some of the large hobby businesses, the well-known ones, as box stores only because they're so big, but you can't get the instruction, and you can't get the, there's no one to go, you know, I mean, sorry, you go into one of the big craft stores and you can't ask anybody how to do this particular stitch or what thread would look good doing this. And first of all, a lot of them don't even carry needlepoint materials to begin with. And you can only get those in your local shop.
Oh yeah, that's just it. And you know, I look at my local store. How many times I've seen Monica, somebody asking, "How do I do this stitch?" or "How do I make this happen?" She turns around on the shelf behind her. She has a doodle cloth with a needle and thread, and she just turns around, grabs it, and here, I'll show you how. Yeah, you don't get that in Joann's. It doesn't happen.
No, yeah.
They show you where the DMC floss is and a coupon, and that's it. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's great that you took the bull by the horns here, Needlepoint Shop Day. So sometime a few days after Destination Dallas next year, you'll have that, and have it at the website. Say that URL again.
We won't clean up by clean up I mean take off the old ads on it, or the events that they listed under each shop. We won't take those off for a while, just so that I can encourage all our shops to get on there and make sure they've checked it out and seen what it is. Sometime probably in about 4 months or so, we'll probably clean off that and then begin to, you know, try to recruit our new group of shops that want to participate, which I do believe will be more than what we had this year. This year we had about 110, I think. And I think that we'll see those numbers go way up now that people understand what it is and what kind of activities they can do for it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's, I sure hope so, because to have a day, particularly this time of year, just before the holidays and the big retail season, to have a day to really call attention to needlepoint stores, that's just terrific. Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, and I did want to put a plug in. Destination Dallas funded all the expenses for it. Destination Dallas paid for the website, paid for a national ad in our trade magazine, and a national ad that was in Needlepoint Now, which is a consumer magazine, and did all the printing and all of those things. And then, as I had mentioned earlier, our webmaster volunteered all of her time. So it was a complete volunteer thing. There was no monies to be earned in this. It was just a total volunteer thing. And my partner and I are very proud of how the first Needlepoint shop day events went. And we're looking forward to the future, to expanding it, making it grow even more.
Well, I think it's great. Yay for you. Nice going. Let's talk about Painted Pony Designs. What's new?
Painted Pony Designs continues to grow. Again, I've been very fortunate with this company. I've lost track of how old we are. We started in 89, so however old that makes me is how old we are. And every year has been a better year than the year before. This year, I think, is going to be a boomer year for us. We started off the year going to market in Las Vegas, and we had two new designers there. One I've mentioned already, her name was Lori Siebert, and I also had another Lori, her name is Lori Lynn Sims, and both of those designers were very enthusiastically received at Vegas. Lori Lynn has a line of little chef themed canvases. The one that was the most popular at market was a little female chef riding on a bicycle with a turquoise background with a basket full of wine. I think she's holding a couple of wine bottles, and it says love the wine you're with.
There you go.
And all of her little canvases have a little theme, a little playoff of some kind of wording like that. The next market we went to was Nashville, where I saw you.
Yep.
And we met in person there, and that was actually a really good market for me, even though that was mostly a cross stitch market. We were very pleased with our sales and the contacts that we made, and that's just an enjoyable little market. Megan and the company she works with, Needlepoint Retailer, put on a nice little market there in Nashville.
Yeah, that was really well run. I was really impressed, I guess I should say, with the way they handle it, because we were there the day when people were setting up, and they clearly had support for all the exhibitors all the way through. It was very nice. Yeah.
Yes. This summer I went to the Cleveland Trade Show. That was the first time our industry had been in Cleveland for a trade show. And that was not as well attended by needlepointers, so that was a little bit disappointing. We held our own. We did okay. The best part of that was that we introduced two new designers at that show. We introduced an artist named Deb Strain, who does a lot of folk arty type pieces, but mostly a lot of seascape type, a lot of nautical designs. Nautical designs were a huge hit. And then we introduced a larger group of canvases from an artist named Suzanne Nicole. And she had a variety of like little tribal forest animals, and she had some nautical pieces and some camping pieces and things like that. And she was, we've done really well with both of those artists over the summer. We've done really well with the four artists that we introduced this year. All four of them have been pretty enthusiastically received. And then, of course, we finished our year of trade shows in Dallas, where we, you know, we had a banner show. My husband showed me just a portion of what we had sold, and it had already beat, that portion that he showed me had already beat our last year's figures, and I still have orders to that I haven't even looked at yet. Sorry, I hope none of my stores heard that, but anyway, I have orders that I haven't looked at yet, because I've been just a little busy with Needlepoint Shop Day and stuff since I got home. But yeah, we had a banner year. I heard from other designers that they'd had a banner year. Shops were just so enthusiastic about coming that year. So it was just a successful market overall. So all of our markets overall have been really good this year.
That's great. Typical year in that you added four designers, or is that average?
No, that was a little bit more. I usually like to add a designer in the spring or the winter, and one in the fall. And so this year, I just happened to run across these four people, and I didn't want them to get snapped up by somebody else, so I grabbed them as fast as I could.
Do you get a lot of people approaching you to carry their designs? I mean, is that growing?
I've had some contacts, and so far I have talked to a cross stitch person when I was in Nashville, and she's interested in expanding into needlepoint, and so I'm going to try to work with her. I just ran out of time this summer to do anything with it, but I'm going to look into her a little bit more this fall and see what we can translate over onto needlepoint canvas. I have had other people contact me through email and stuff. I'm a member. I've joined a couple of different groups that you can see pictures of, like portfolios from different designers and stuff. But I haven't found anybody through that. Most of the way I find them is just old fashioned research, just looking and looking and looking and looking until I finally find someone. I do have one artist in the wings that I've talked to. I just haven't gotten her signed up yet, but she's interested, and she's actually from Europe as opposed to here in the States.
No. Oh.
Fortunately, she speaks English, so we can talk.
So we have any new angels lately?
The last group of angels I had came out in Cleveland, and we only had four, but they've done really well. The one that's done the best is one called Taco Tuesday, and everyone's like, why did you design a taco angel? But if you're from Texas, you completely understand why you need a taco angel, because on Taco Tuesday in Texas is like our own weekly holiday, and that's where all the Mexican food restaurants sell their tacos for $1, and it's like a big deal here in Texas. So when I did Taco Tuesday, a lot of people got the joke, and a lot of the shops, even shops outside of Texas that know about Taco Tuesday, have bought that angel. I did finish up the third angel of our Wise Men series. We have a gift of frankincense, a gift of gold, a gift of myrrh. I finished up gift of myrrh for that market, so that series is now complete. I am considering adding a shepherd and maybe a couple other characters to it, but I haven't done that yet. We had a little angel, a simple little angel called Twinkle Time. She's just got stars all over. And there's one more. Oh, the other one is called Dreamcatcher, and she has a dreamcatcher painted on her and some feathers, and she says, follow your dreams. And she's been actually pretty popular. I had another one earlier in the year that was a little saying, a little mantra that I always use with my daughter. It's an angel that says she believed she could, so she did. And that, both of those little angels, I think because they have kind of little mantra type things, have been real popular as well. Hmm. I've got several on the boards. I ran out of time for Dallas, but I've got some great ideas, and I'm just going to work on them throughout the fall and kind of release them maybe in November, and then come up with a few more new ones in January when I go to the January show.
Do you have downtime? Is that what's coming up here, is a little bit slower time in the next 2 or 3 months?
Well, let me put it this way. Bang on. I have two full-time jobs because I have Destination Dallas and I have Painted Pony. And if that wasn't enough, we threw in local needlepoint shop day, which also took several hours a week to do. Now that Dallas is over, I have one full-time job. So that's basically my vacation, is the fact that I only have one full-time job for 3 or 4 months.
Excellent.
Yes. Yeah. There is no such thing as downtime. When you have your own company, when you take off, you pay for it on the backside
Right.
forever. Because it's almost as if you're punished for taking time off, because when you come home, you've got, 80 emails that you have to answer. You've got 25 phone messages that have to be answered. You have orders that have been sitting there for, however long you were gone and stuff like that. So I'm usually kind of crazy right about the time that they stuff me in the car and take me away, because I'm trying to get so much done before I leave. It's just hard when you have your own business. It's not as easy as people think, but for me, the benefits of being able to control, my life to some degree, outweighs working outside the
Oh
outside
yeah.
my own
And
family.
it's something you
Right.
love and enjoy doing, and oh sure. No, there's lots of
It
pluses, but
is. And it's such an honor to have people to find out that people love your stuff and they buy your stuff. In the case of the Angels, we have avid collectors that are just waiting for the next groups to come out. They send me pictures at Christmas of their trees. I always get several pictures every Christmas of people's angel trees or their angel banners or whatever they've done with their angels. And it's such an honor to be in people's homes. And
right.
I saw on Facebook a couple of weeks ago someone had stitched an angel in memory of her mother, and I was really touched by that they would pick a Painted Pony design to commemorate their mother's life. So, something that they could look at, I guess, on their tree or on their doorknob or wherever she put it, and remind her of her mom. So it's really touching when you find out that your pieces are in all these different homes all over the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, becomes more than just selling painted canvases. Yeah, it's a lot more. Yeah.
It is, and it's fun to get on the different Facebook groups and watch your pieces being stitched and people talking about them. It's fun. I always try to make a comment about something that they're stitching, because I want those people to know that I saw it and that I was really honored to see it, that it had been put out there and that they were working on it.
Yeah. That's neat. That's neat to hear that side of the business, because yeah, so often the days are just slogging through things just to satisfy customers and bring in some money, and to have those little rewards that come with it is really worth everything.
It really is. Makes
Yeah.
it special. And it's also nice because even though this is a business for me, the needlepoint world is a small community. Whether you're a shop owner, a teacher, a designer, or a stitcher, we're just a lot closer community, I think, than the typical type of thing that somebody would be selling. Like when you go to a trade show and you're selling computers, you're just usually, from what I understand, you're just talking about computers. When you come to a trade show for needlepoint, we talk about your child that graduated and did your other one have the baby
Right.
and things like that. And it's a cool little niche industry, where you just really get to know everyone. And with the Facebook groups, now we get to know our customers a lot more, and the customers will write in and they're excited to show you something, and then you get some that just want to talk, they're excited to meet you, the designer of some piece that they've done, and then you'll end up having these little conversations. And every once in a while I just get a little Facebook message from someone just to tell me about their day or something, and so you kind of develop a lot of friendships that way, and it's just a nice little industry, I think, to be
Yeah.
in.
Yep.
Nice
Well,
little
yeah.
world.
No, it's terrific, and the internet and Facebook in particular have made it even more so, because it just allows people all over the place to connect with each other and share the hobby. And that's just fantastic.
It is.
Yep. Debbie, once again, enjoyed it. This has been fun. We'll have we'll have to do this again next year. Maybe next year I can get to Destination Dallas and see it firsthand. That would be great.
I would really love it. Our theme next year is called Jazzed Up About Needlepoint. We're going to have a New Orleans theme. We're going to have a New Orleans band. If you haven't seen it on Facebook, there were several postings of the band that we had at the end of our banquet. We always introduce the next year's theme at the very end of our banquet. And what we did is we had a band burst through the kitchen doors into the banquet area and marched through it, and everybody got up, marched behind it, and we went out into the hotel lobby. We threw beads, you know, all the Mardi Gras beads and things like that to all the people that were out there. So anyway, it should be a wild and crazy market next year with the Mardi Gras theme.
Excellent. All right, Debbie, really enjoyed it. Thank you. Best of luck with all of your businesses, all three of them.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for having me tonight and being able to talk about the business and reach out to your listeners.
Yep. And thanks to everybody for listening. And Christine and I will be back on Wednesday.